But first, we are going to talk about independent cinema, and we're going to talk about some unknown pleasures. And we have with me at the moment co-curators of Unknown Pleasures, Australian Independent Cinema, Chris Luskry, and on the phone, Bill Masoulas. Bill and Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us, Peter.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you.
And I think we can all hear each other.
I think so, yeah.
Hopefully.
Absolutely. Excellent.
Yep.
Now, let's talk about, first of all, this concept of Unknown Pleasures, how it all came about, and what you're going to do with that.
Well, maybe I'll start seeing as, I guess, I proposed this to Chris, my fellow co-curator. Basically, both Chris and I have a real kind of passion for Melbourne independent filmmaking and cinema in particular. And last year, I basically by myself programmed a few sessions of various things at this particular venue, Long Play, in Melbourne, which is like a boutique cinema. And the sessions I programmed were really fantastic, but they were pretty sporadic, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if it could be a more regular kind of event, you know, every month, with maybe, you know, a couple of screenings per month, and to give it a title. And we kind of thought about what kind of title to give it, and one suggestion was Unknown Pleasures, Australian Independent Cinema, because a lot of this work actually does get buried and maybe only seen a little bit, even current contemporary work, but certainly the work from the past as well, it just doesn't get seen too much. So so basically I asked Chris if he wanted to join me in curating some sessions, and he said yes. Yeah.
Okay, and well done. So you're working together on this. Chris, what's your background in the film world?
Well, I'm a strange one. I came from initially from community television, and then through, I guess, some criticism and film curation programming. And recently I've been sort of moving more actively into filmmaking, both as a producer and making some of my own work. And insofar as, I guess, when I met Bill, I must have met you when 2008, I think, when yeah. I was, yeah. So we've known each other for a while.
When you were 20 years of age.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Yeah, it's true. And so Bill's really served as a very important mentor for me throughout the last 10 years, just in terms of, I guess, keeping myself oriented towards the things that I value in film, and also helping to, you know, I guess, give me a wider sense of the history of Australian independent filmmaking and why it's important to keep it active. And what's really wonderful about the program that he proposed, and the reason I really wanted to jump on board, was the fact that there really is the opportunity to do a wonderful blend of previous work and also contemporary work, but even more importantly, to have filmmakers of different generations in the same room. Often we find that Australian filmmaking is very fragmented, and you'll often find enclaves of different people doing different things, but not a great point of synergy or synthesis outside of film schools. And even some of the film schools are sometimes a little bit more focused internally for good reason, on the filmmakers that they're kind of nurturing and developing. And so this is really an opportunity, I think, to try and provide a more, I guess, literally intersectional space for filmmakers to arise in response to different kinds of work.
And this, of course, gives the opportunity for a lot of filmmakers and independent Australian films, short films and feature films to be screened, which normally would not see the light of day, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah, there's some interesting work as part of this program, and it's, I mean, Bill, do you want to talk a bit about Matt's film Butterfly Flower? Because I don't think I've seen it yet.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. The very first screening we're having, which is this Monday, February 11, is a feature film called Butterfly Flower. It's by a Filipino-Australian filmmaker, Matthew Victor Pastor, who is a bit of a phenomenon at the moment, almost like a sensation, because he makes so many feature films really quickly. it's something that we maybe see in Asia or in America or even Europe, but Australian film production is always so kind of laborious, even when it comes to independent features. But Matt's got, like, you know, 6 features at the moment that he's completed or is about to complete, you know, just over the space of the last year or two. And this one, which is nominally from the year 2017, is actually not part of those 6 features. It's the one before the 6 features that are currently available.
Yeah.
He's a real dynamo. He's still young. He's 29. And his films, the themes revolve around kind of like Asian or Filipino people in Australia, and all those kind of obvious identity kind of and racial kind of issues that come up. And this particular film, Butterfly Flower, is on one of his themes that he loves, which is prostitution and giving yourself over to something. But also trying to empower yourself at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So the women in his films, in this one, they're prostitutes, but they're still empowered in a kind of way. And then, of course, we see the ugly male behaviour, and it's quite a sordid film. But the other thing about Matt's work is that he's a stylist, so visually his films are quite amazing. So. Even though he shows a sordid world in this film, it's very beautiful with the neon lights and the movement and the music and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, Matt is like a young filmmaker who I feel is emblematic of some more kind of interesting young filmmakers coming through. Mm. And I know that there's some really interesting people at VCA at the moment who are graduating or doing first or second year. For me, this is like a new generation. It's kind of like a third generation of Australian filmmakers. So we had the ones in the 70s, then the ones in the 90s, and now we've got this younger, a new generation, which I'm finding quite exciting, you know, getting to know their work. And I think Chris is quite familiar with a few of these people as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and certainly when I met Matt, I was instantly taken by his passion and his energy. He's just an incredible guy. And the first thing I think I saw of his was a short film that he made as the VCA Masters graduation film called I Am Jupiter, I Am the Biggest Planet. And I was just knocked out by it. It was this film that felt like late period Fassbinder, you know, wedded with kind of Lino Broca star themes and ideas.
Mm.
And it was really something that I think, this is a guy I want to see more films from. And, I mean, he is just making more films, so I'm struggling to keep up with everything.
And that's an interesting point, because, when I spoke to Sue Maslin a couple of weeks ago, or last week, and she said there are 58 Australian films that she knew of that were produced last year.
Features. Yeah. Including documentaries?
I think so.
Yeah.
But I gather that's still the tip of the iceberg, because it sounds like there is much more happening that we're not familiar with.
Well, it depends on if she's including no-budget features that she knows about that play in the Melbourne Underground Film Festival and other kind of places, because that kind of no-budget area is full. There's so many films being made. I know Sue does have her finger on the pulse. She's more a mainstream person, independent/mainstream. I'd say she's probably including some no-budget ones. So she's done some good research there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. But it's great that what you are doing, both of you, Chris and Bill, are putting these filmmakers forward so that audiences can see a lot of these films that would, as I said before, would not normally be seen. And so this Long Play Cinema venue, it looks like it's going to be a great haven for films, Australian films, that people would not have seen before, would like to get to know.
Yeah, I think so. Yep. Definitely. I think it's also it's particularly. It's based around the nature of what we already like doing, because we've both done screenings at Long Play before, and it just sort of feels like the right kind of atmosphere for this kind of work. Certainly in relation to how filmmakers and audiences feel when they come together in the space. I think some of the screenings Bill did last year were like really, yeah, beautifully emblematic of that communal atmosphere that, that happens when you do screenings this way. And I think that, yeah, we just hope to keep continuing in that vein.
So one of the main points here is that we're always trying to get the filmmaker to be present for a discussion. Mm. And also have other filmmakers present, and not just that filmmaker to his or her kind of set audience. So the whole spirit of community, it does hark back to, you know, 30 years ago when cooperatives existed and and filmmakers came together in a space and shared ideas and passions. So in a way, we're almost consciously trying to resurrect something like that again.
Excellent news. And did some of this start at the Adelaide Film Festival? I think that's where the origins of all of this might be.
Well, basically, I programmed some films for the Adelaide Film Festival last year, focusing on new work from the last couple of years.
Hmm.
And so I guess that's my kind of programming activities. But even before that came up last year, I was putting a few things on at Long Play, and Chris himself too has put things on, as he mentioned a moment ago. And I'm not sure. There's a new feeling in Australian cinema, I feel, especially at this kind of indie level. There's a kind of feeling that we want to get together and believe in cinema again and be passionate about it and sort of see it and even like the work that Chris has programmed for Thursday the 14th,
yep,
which is What I Have Written by John Hughes. It's from 1996.
Mm.
And I'm not sure, do you know, Chris, when the last time this film may have screened in Melbourne?
It's a good question. I haven't actually looked that up, but it has been a while. And I recall it may actually have been somewhere around the time that John Cumming wrote his book about John Hughes. Or just prior to that, or maybe not.
At the Cinematheque, maybe?
No, actually, no, it wasn't. No, I really don't know when it was last screened, but I know it's been a while. And my only screening of it has been via the DVD that John himself gave me, along with a note, which is a lovely thing, you know, when you're able to get a film directly from the hand of the filmmaker. It's just lovely. I find that's happening more and more now, and I tend to be watching a lot more films by friends or by filmmakers that give me something and say, what do you think of this? And that's just a really lovely thing. But I guess going back to that film, it's another one of those films that came at a very particular and peculiar junction in Australian film history, where it was, because it really is very much like a European art film in the kind of like mid-period, like Alain René, fragmented memory kind of thing.
Yep.
Based on a book, but shot by Dion Bieber, the cinematographer who went on to win an Oscar in Hollywood, and it has a really great atmosphere and a really rich, very intellectual kind of approach to its subject matter, and it just feels completely out of place in contemporary Australian film, which is why it's such a wonderful thing to show, because John hasn't made any fiction features since then, although his work has sort of sometimes straddled the hybrid documentary / essay kind of mode.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a film that's just, yeah, really, really interesting. I hope for audiences will be a reminder of the scope of possibilities throughout Australian film history.
Yep. I remember seeing the film at the AFI screenings, because every year I see all the films that are part of the AFI screenings for voting purposes and so on. And I remember how that one stood out as pretty much an experimental, unusual sort of film from an Australian filmmaker. And yet it didn't have too many others who were very interested in it. They thought it was too odd for their liking, which is surprising.
Strange, because it got a Margaret and David both gave it 4 stars at them on the movie show, and it world premiered at the Berlin Film Festival in 1996. So it had quite a strong profile at the time.
Yep.
But yeah, just sort of has completely disappeared from the radar, and to a degree that it's very much worth resurrecting.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's on Thursday.
Yeah.
At 7:30. Let's talk about what else is scheduled in March and April.
Well, we've basically got March and April's program down. So the first six screenings are locked in place. Mm. And at the moment, I'm planning to what we're doing is basically each month I'm curating one program and Chris is curating the other program. And Chris is pretty much interested more in the history of Australian independent film, and I'm more interested in more current work that's being done. So for March, I've got a filmmaker called Ian Bonner, who is still pretty young. He's probably late 30s maybe. Mm. Sorry if I'm making you older than you are, Ian. yeah, and he's a VCA graduate, and he's made about 15 short films that are really fantastic. And so he's not too well known, and he's thinking about getting a feature off the ground just now. And so for me, this is a chance to for people to see his films, for he himself to see his work in the one sitting, like a dozen of his short films all grouped together.
Yeah, that's so great.
And he's a really interesting filmmaker for me. There's another similar person like that in April, a filmmaker called Matthew Rook, who is an older filmmaker and who is a VCA graduate of the early to mid-90s. But he's kind of, been more in the film industry, and he's been a film teacher. But he's along the way, he's made about a dozen or 15 short films himself, but no feature yet.
Mm.
So for me, it's like these two screenings are a chance to see what these two filmmakers have to offer. And that their work has been screened a little bit here and there, but it's just it's good to put the spotlight on them. And Chris, you've got two sessions from more established filmmakers.
Yeah, in March we're going to be screening two films from Maggie Fook, both centred on the area in St Kilda where she spent a lot of her youth and formative years. The first is Pleasure Domes, which is her acclaimed film from 1987. This is just extraordinarily beautiful essay film about memory, but using these kind of layered superimpositions and dissolves with hand-painted watercolour animation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an incredibly beautiful film. I think it's only about 6 minutes long. And then that precedes her... much celebrated diary film, all shot on high video and then transferred to 16mm, called Mandalay, which is a record of the famous hotel as it was getting or under threat of demolishment and gentrification. So it's a film that's sort of about the local politics of the area, and Maggie has been very, very involved in community advocacy and politics in St Kilda, and since then she currently runs a beautiful little hotel called the Brooklyn Arts Hotel in Fitzroy. And so there's a wonderful lineage between her filmmaking practice and her just generosity of spirit and communal, her sense of community involvement that's sort of continued since then. And then in April, we're showing a project by James Clayton called 55 Phases of Looking, which is ostensibly a series of very, very short clips that he made, or very, very short films that he made for web release, I suppose. I guess he made them for himself, but he was releasing them one after another on his Facebook page, with a view to stringing them all together into a longer sequence. So it is actually a standalone work of about 52 or 53 minutes duration. And it's really, really remarkable because it's a further refinement of his... sort of latter period practice where he takes material from stuff that he'd previously shot and reworks it.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that with his Super 8 and some of his 16mm works to make the ghost paintings, those wonderful series of films he made in the I think from 86, 87 through to about 2004. And this is sort of a further reflection on that, sometimes using material that he's taken from VHS and sometimes using stuff that he's just shot with his phone. Yeah, and they're really, really interesting. Very, very experimental and very much in the style of his other work. But yeah, I love his stuff. I think he's amazing.
Okay, so they're the six programs that are coming up from Monday, February 11th, through to Monday, April the 15th. I suppose people listening to this might want to either book tickets or find out more information and so on. How does it all work?
Well, I can give people a tip. Just search for the title Unknown Pleasures, but put Long Play next to it, otherwise you'll just get the Joy Division album coming up. So Unknown Pleasures, Long Play, and it'll come up with the program. Yeah.
Mm. And it's only $5 entry fee, which is great.
It is, yeah.
Yep.
And Long Play Cinema is at 318, as you said, St George's Road, North Fitzroy.
Yep.
So I know that you've got two websites, pureshitcinema.com and innocence.com.au, which deal with a lot of the independent filmmakers and independent films and so on. Is there a lot that people can see on those websites?
Heaps, yeah.
Yeah, the Innocence site basically houses a site called Melbourne Independent Filmmakers. And I started it about 15 years ago, and it's now got lots of profiles of people, some people that are more known, like Richard Lowenstein or Alkinos Tsilomiros, but it's also got, you know, experimental filmmakers and all kinds of people. And for some of these people, it's almost the only web presence they have in terms of providing major information about them, a lengthy profile with filmography and biography and that kind of thing. And and actually two of the filmmakers I was speaking about before, Ian Bonner and Matthew Rook, they will have profiles in the Melbourne Independent Filmmakers website up in a few weeks' time, because I'm putting together some new profiles at the moment. And the other website, which is called Pure Shit Australian Cinema, is just brand new. It's existed for about 9 months so far, I think, 9-10 months. And it's more like a journal or a general website with contributions from many people, basically around the Australian independent cinema. And Chris, I believe I'm still waiting for a contribution from you.
Oh yes, indeed. Eventually, we'll get around to it.
And some of the audience may not recognise why it's called Pure Shit Cinema is because there is a classic Australian film,
indeed,
called Pure Shit, which I still have fond memories of, and now we can talk about it. Although, 10-15 years ago, we couldn't say that on air.
it got its release as Pure S.
Yes, that's right.
Look, it's a classic film from 1975, and actually, I think it's probably time to screen it at these screenings that we're doing here. I actually put it on in Adelaide a few months ago, which is where I live, and the lead actor, Gary Waddell, who lives in Adelaide at the moment, he presented the film and spoke about it, and it was a fantastic night. The director is Bert Dealing, and he's in the country somewhere in Victoria and a bit of a recluse, so he won't be coming out for the screening, but I think, maybe that's a film we can play. But this is the beauty of what Chris and I are doing here, that there are so many films that one could put on. There is a really rich history of Australian independent filmmaking, going back to the 50s even, like late 50s, early 60s. The iconic figure of Giorgio Mangiamelli, for example, the Italian migrant who made these great independent films at that time. And then, of course, after that, we had the Ubu group in Sydney and so many filmmakers in Australia during all that time. I better stop now because I'll talk forever. I'll throw it back to you, Peter.
No, that's fine. It's fine. It's I think a lot of people listening will not necessarily know many of these films and filmmakers, and this is a great introduction for some of the audience into those films. Yeah, which is fantastic. So I'm really pleased that you've put this together, you and Chris. And
thanks.
Unknown Pleasures, Australian Independent Cinema. Now, before I let you go, just a few final questions. And yes, so you can search for all the details, Unknown Pleasures and Long Play. Put that together. Yep. You don't want any Joy Division. But
although that's also a perfectly good way to spend your evening listening to that album. Yeah. Oh, we would prefer you to come to our screenings, though.
I would think that would be the main focus, yeah. In terms of the state of play of what's happening in Australian cinema at the moment, in terms of emerging filmmakers and so on, are you optimistic or pessimistic, if you can sort of put it that way, about where Australian cinema is heading?
Oh dear, how do I answer that question? Wow. Exactly. It feels like they ask it every year.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Oh, I'm pretty optimistic, but at the same time there are cycles for these things.
Yeah.
As I said before, there are young filmmakers and Matthew Victor Pastor, who I spoke about before.
Mm.
This is a crossroads moment for him and possibly for all of Australian cinema. I know that may sound a bit dramatic, but I think he needs to start being programmed by MIF, for example, and he needs to start getting funding and making films that get distribution.
Yeah,
because at the moment all these films are kind of quickly made and you know, just, I don't know, they don't get too many screenings. And so I see that there's a moment at the moment where Australian cinema could push upwards and create something very vibrant, whereas some of these indie filmmakers can rise more and penetrate the mainstream a bit, which I've got nothing against. You know, I'm not an underground person who believes only in the underground.
Mm.
Chris, what do you think?
I think it's in one sense, in the sense of the amount of work being produced and the quality of some of the work being produced, it's impossible to say just how great the scope of great work is, because we just don't know. I suspect, yeah, we know maybe even Bill and I probably only about 30% of the stuff that is out there.
Mm-hmm.
So in the sense of the richness of the ecology of filmmaking in Australia, it's incredible. There's probably never been a better time. In terms of the mechanisms for the support of filmmakers, it's really complex. It's similarly diverse. There are many different routes through which filmmakers can go about getting their work supported, but it's also far more fragmented than it used to be. And in some respects, that's better, because it means that filmmakers have more of a chance of discerning or creating their own space. But it also means that there's a difficulty in them scaling up. And if the route is to go to Screen Australia or Film Victoria with a feature project to try and get that funded, that's more competitive than it's ever been. It's harder than it's ever been. It's a worthwhile route for some filmmakers, not for all. And it really depends on the aims of the project. And so, given in the last few years my turn, I've sort of moved into producing more, I'm really conscious about my role, as now that I'm getting a little bit older, of wanting to mentor younger filmmakers who are in a position that I was in 10 years ago, about thinking through some of these issues about exactly what they want with their work, who do they want to show it to, why do they want to show it, what kind of a return do they want, whether that be a financial or a cultural return. I think, yeah, when you plug into your question in more detail, there's many more attendant questions to that.
Of course.
Yeah,
sure. No, I understand. And of course, with the rise of streaming services and video on demand and other platforms, that's both a positive and a negative, I suppose, in terms of getting film seen.
Yeah, I mean, one of my friends, the wonderful filmmaker Alison Shawn, is currently in development on a project where she's thinking of web being a crucial component of that. She has released some of her work online on a forum for slow cinema called Tau Film, run by this critic and programmer Nadine Mai. So there are these smaller, more emerging streaming services as well, or online cinematechs like Mubi or Fandor, which I think is now defunct. But there's a few more that are forming, where they're very specialist. Yeah, very specialist online curation. And I think, yeah, you would probably know as much about that, or now with what you're doing, Bill, with your website.
I mean, on Pure Shit, I've got a whole section, a whole page of films that are online that one can watch.
Mm.
But I guess I just wanted to mention Ausflix, you know, the platform for Australian cinema that Ron Brown runs. There's potential there for, you know, more underground indie kind of Australian cinema to go online there. And then I've been speaking to Ron about that, about presenting works by people like Matt Pastor or other people where I could introduce them, and if they would possibly reach a broader audience than just, you know, the occasional screening like the ones we're putting on now.
Yeah.
So there's kind of scope. So who knows what the future holds? Yeah.
Okay, but it's good answers, because it's it's always interesting to speculate and to talk through some of these issues, and there isn't always the opportunity on radio to talk about some of these things.
Totally. Yeah.
Sure.
So there you are. Okay, final question before I let you both go. In terms of mainstream cinema that's happening at the moment, have you seen anything of late that impressed you?
Oh, that's a good question. Bill?
I'll give you some thinking time, Chris. I've got an answer ready.
Yep, go for it.
Peter surprised me with it last time I was on his show, but this time I have an answer ready. But for me, I just saw the film The Wild Pear Tree.
Oh yeah.
The Turkish film by Silan, and I'm familiar with the director's work anyway.
Yep.
But this film really surprised me with its level of realism and complexity. So I don't need to say anything more about it. I think it's just a moment by moment, it's a really great film to watch, and it goes for over 3 hours.
Mm.
So I was really impressed with that one. I'm not sure if that's been released properly in Australia yet, or...
It has, yeah. It's still playing at the Nova, I think, on limited season.
Yes, it is. Okay. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, yeah. No, I fully endorse that. It's a great film. Chris?
Oh, what have I seen lately? I do like the Jelan film, but I saw it at the film festival. I don't watch a lot of as much films as I used to. I made the mainstream. What have I seen? Oh dear.
Okay.
I didn't like Roma very much. Ah. I thought the favorite was good but not great.
Okay. Tell me about Roma. Why you?
Oh, I just think the film is incredibly patronizing towards its central character. Yeah, I think that she doesn't have any agency or personality or depth to her, and the film hovers on the outskirts of her subjectivity in a way that I found was completely conflicting with its subject matter. I.e. a film about memory. It didn't feel like the form was appropriate to that at all for me. Okay. But, you know, it's a beautifully made film technically, and there are some wonderful things about it for sure, and there's some elements, visual elements, as I was saying before, that haven't seen in films necessarily before, like the beach sequence towards the end.
Mm.
That was a film that I had issue with. In terms of mainstream, I guess maybe I'm thrown by your question as to what the definition of mainstream is. I wouldn't call the Jelan film mainstream, never necessarily. But if we're talking about films that were
in cinemas
commercially released, I really love Suspiria. That was the last big release film that I saw that I just...
The new version?
Yeah, yep. I love that film.
Yeah, it's interesting how it's polarised people.
Yeah, I love the fact that it's polarised people. I think it's just a really rich, meaty, beautiful, wildly contradictory feast. A little bit like, again, Fassbinder, but this time with kind of late period Ken Russell thrown in.
Ken Russell, interesting. Yeah. No, I agree with you.
I went to the cinema after having downed a bottle and a half of wine because my dining companion wasn't drinking that night, and I came into the cinema like sort of slightly drunk and with a splitting headache, and it was just so much fun. It was the best way to watch the film.
Wow. Yeah. Let's talk about watching films in different states of consciousness. All right. Unknown Pleasures, Australian Independent Cinema, begins Monday at Long Play Cinema in North Fitzroy. Go Google Unknown Pleasures and Long Play and you'll get more details. A terrific array of rarely seen Australian films will be presented, and it's been great having Chris Luskrie in the studio and Bill Masoulas on the phone. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Pleasure.